My name is Stephen Kratz, and I work for the Carolina Study Center. I've been with them for about 20 years now. We provide speakers for difficult subjects at universities at no charge, so a lot of the staff of FCA or Crusade can well handle how to become a Christian or prayer, but apologetical issues or how the Bible came to be, issues like theodicy are beyond their scope as trained theologians, so we provide speakers in there. I was out at Duke recently and asked to speak on self-esteem to a group of Duke women. And I asked during supper, why do you want me to speak on that? And they said, well, a lot of our women struggle with anorexia and bulimia. That's not a self-esteem issue, it's a control issue. So I said, why don't you follow up what I'm going to teach tonight with a psychiatrist friend of mine who will come up from Wilmington. She's been anorexic, and she's been victorious over it, and she can share with more insight than I can. So that's some of what we do there. Over the years, we've been to about 60, 65 different campuses, from Oxford in England to Harvard to Emory in Atlanta, up and down the Eastern Seaboard. I was at Oxford University 2 years ago and taught a course on the Psalms and poetry and letting poetry find a place in your life. I've also taught in divinity schools as a guest teacher on leadership and apologetics. Jim Abrahamson helped me teach the apologetics class. We've also written a number of books that are needful among the college group. Back in the 70s, InterVarsity published my book, If You Haven't Got a Prayer. It's my best-selling book in Korean. And one of my favorite books that I actually wrote for my children, but it's popular on campus, What I Wish Somebody Had Told Me About Sex When I Was 13. I'd like to go back and rewrite it, What I Wish Somebody Had Told Me About Marriage When I Was 67. We have a website, CarolinaStudyCenter.com, that has over 200 teachings on it. And you can download a teaching on how do I know I've met the right one and ought to get married. Or you can download Breaking Up is Hard to Do. So that's helpful to students. We also have two fellowships. Our Spurgeon Fellows is a ministry that I don't do much of, but our other staff worker, Brian, does. It's called Spurgeon Fellows. Do you know the Charles Haddon Spurgeon struggled with depression? And the only reason he could stay effective in the ministry was a support group of Christians around him. And 1,200 ministers a month quit the ministry. Lots of reasons for that. And many of them are million-dollar investments. My son was out of the ministry for 2.5 years, very abused by a senior pastor that was narcissistic. And he managed to stay in the ministry. He's in Burlington now, very happily functioning in a church that needs him. And so we have a ministry to broken pastors to try to restore them. But we also do what is my favorite ministry, the John Knox Fellows. These are students who think they want to be a minister. And we intern them for a summer up to a year and show them what ministry is really like. And then help them determine, is the Holy Spirit really calling you to be a pastor, or are you just projecting it on yourself? There are other things that we do, but that's the essential things the study center is about. I was preaching a Bible study that I share in on Thursdays here in the area, and a stranger came up to me with an odd accent, Dr. Peter Poon. His name is actually Peter Pan, but he changed his name so people would take him seriously. He's retired from IBM. He helped Europe decide to put its banking online, so he made a lot of money for IBM, something of a legend with them. And he also talked the China country of China into bringing the World Wide Web to China. He's retired now, but he has a heart for his old nation. He was born in Hong Kong 50 years ago, came to this nation and got his degree and worked a career with IBM. And I told him that I was very interested in China also, but I didn't know much about it. In fact, a political scientist friend of mine here on campus told me that the three great political questions of the next 25 years are these. One, will the Western world reclaim its Christian values or continue to drift into lukewarmness and dissolution? Two, will Islam learn to moderate itself, especially in its attitude towards women? And if so, will it become a great religion and worldwide power, or will it always be seen as the enemy and ultimately be destroyed? And number three, what will replace Maoism in China? Will it be Christianity or materialism or something else? And I said, Peter, if you and I live long enough and the Lord tarries, we're going to have a front row seat at the answer to those three questions. And Peter looked at me and he said, Stephen, I don't want a front row seat. I want to drive. And I said, what do you mean, Peter? And he said, I have a vision of how we can minister to China. And I said, tell me about it. Do you know there are over 5,000 Chinese students in the RTP, scattered among Central, State, Duke, Carolina? And each year, 200 distinguished visiting Chinese professors come to teach at these universities. They're homesick. Many of them are away from their children, or away from their parents, away from the food they know and love. And Peter and his wife wanted to get them together. She is a gourmet cook. If you get a chance to eat at Celia Poon's table, it is an unforgettable experience. So the Chinese professors come out in droves, bring their wives with them if they have them, their children if they're here. And then we teach them on a Christian worldview. Many of these professors are already Christians, about 20%. The other 80% will tell you things like, I am not yet a Christian, but I am very curious and I am eager to learn. Tell me about your Christ, your culture, the Reformation. Is the Bible an American book? Where did it come from? These type questions. And after having them in our home and one-on-one walks with them and teaching them, after a year they go back and scatter in the university system across China. Well, Peter challenged me to join with him as a teacher. He said, for some reason, the way I teach, the Chinese enjoy or can understand. And he said, I'd like you to make a 10-year commitment to do this. And so I agreed. And we decided that'd be 2,000 professors in China with some knowledge of Christ, many of them Christians. That can make a difference. And so we agreed to do that. And then once a year, we go over and visit them in their academic environment. Not all of them. There are too many schools they've scattered to, but a proportionate. We just took our first trip there. Now let me talk about that trip. J.R.R. Tolkien in Lord of the Rings said this, it is a dangerous business, Frodo, going out your door. You step onto the road, and if you don't keep your feet, there's no telling where you might end up. I like what John Steinbeck said about travel. He said, you don't take a journey, it takes you. 2 weeks prior to the trip to China, I woke up in a cold sweat one night. And I said, how far am I going? I agreed to go for 6 weeks, 40 days. This is a strange land. Will my health stand to the trip? And, you know, I have a certain pillow I like. And they're probably not going to have that pillow there. And Lord, I know your middle name is Go, as in go ye into all the world, but did I miss here? Because I'm not sure I want to do this. And finally, I just decided to trust Jesus and go back to sleep. Well, I took the trip, and every one of my nightmares came true. The pillows were not what I was used to. The food was very different. But so many wonderful joys and pleasures and dreams and things I never even thought of came about. I ate squid, crocodile, mulberry worms, chicken feet. That was the hardest one. Fish head soup. The mattresses were about 3 inches too short for me. And 18-hour days, we were up and moving at 6 and often not back to wherever we were staying till 9 at night. I was standing on a street corner in Beijing about a week after I got there, and I was smelling the wafts of city perfume. You know what I mean by that? There was the smell of sewage coming up from the sidewalk, the garlic smell of people that had obviously eaten a lot of garlic, diesel fumes and human sweat. And all this was wafting with about 20 different flavors of cooking meats and stuff that were being sold by vendors. And it sort of turns your stomach. But in all of this, there was the aroma of Jesus Christ. Now, be clear, I'm no expert on China. I've spent my life trying to understand the Western world, its poetry, its theology, its view of God, its history. And I have been vaguely aware of Chinese history and its dynasties, but these last 3 years have been new to me as an immersion in it. Teaching you today is like taking a thimble and getting the Atlantic Ocean in it. There is the Atlantic Ocean in that thimble, but it's only a thimble full of the Atlantic. And so I'm no expert. I just have a thimble full. I've come home with absolute wonder and awe at who the Chinese people are. I spent a day in the Forbidden City. I have seen the palaces of Versailles, Buckingham Palace, the Winter Palace in Russia, but I have never seen a palace like the Forbidden City. That place is built to intimidate. It's built to show off the power of the Chinese dynasty. I climbed Mount Huashan, I think it's called. If you go on YouTube and look at the world's most dangerous hike, I was there. That was an amazing experience. We took a trip down the River Lee with some of the professors. That's where the mountains pop right out of the water's edge, an incredible sight. Westlake, one of the rich places north of Shanghai. We studied the history of 13 dynasties that go back thousands of years. It's poem, it's music. And I remember the ready laugh of the Chinese people. One of the things that I remember shaking my head at was the lack of intelligent civil engineering in some parts of China. I'm not good with steps at my age. And boy, there's steps everywhere in China. You're walking down the street and you go up 18 steps. You walk across a flat surface and you go down 18 steps. And you think, why was that there? And there's no reason except it was pretty. And it gets you in shape. I remember sitting in a cafe with about 50 professors eating supper. And we were having open flame cooking, and there was a plastic tablecloth on the table with this fire nearby, and I thought, my goodness, it'd be easy for that to catch on fire. And so I started looking for the exit door, just to be prepared in case. And I noticed the doors opened inward. And, you know, we have panic bars on our doors, so you won't get caught in a flash fire like that, trying to get the door open with 50 people pushing behind you. They've got some real issues to study there and to work out. But so many things the Chinese do well that the United States can learn from. The respect for the elderly is pretty amazing. I was speaking at UNC Charlotte a while back. And afterwards, this kid on the guitar walked up to me and he said, "Dude, who are you?" And I told him a little about myself. And he said, "Well, dude, when you walked in the room, I thought, he's lost." And when somebody said, "Well, he's our speaker for tonight," he said, "This is going to be awful." And he said, "What is that thing you do up there when you did your thing?" And I said, "That's called preaching or teaching." "Oh, man, that was so cool." Young people think if you're over 40, you have nothing to offer them. But the Chinese really treat elderly people with great respect. They hold doors open for you. They give you the seat on the bus. They want to hear what you have to say more than they do what a young person has to say. And the Chinese walk. I'm used to walking about 2 miles a day. In China, we were walking 3 miles on a slow day and 9 miles on a long day. They have protected bike paths. A lot of people bike. If it has wheels on it, and you can pedal it or put a motor on it, you'll see it on the Chinese streets. And then their dining is so much more appropriate than it is here in fast food America. They eat at round tables, and they have what we would call a lazy Susan on it. And they put out 3 or 4 kinds of meats, 12 to 15 different types of vegetables. The only thing I can say bad about the Chinese diet, they haven't discovered chocolate yet. And let me get this in too. I didn't see a rocking chair the whole time I was in China. And chocolate and rocking chairs are a main staple of this boy's life. Their diet is far fresher and far better for you. They don't cook like we cook in the South, deep fried Snickers candy bars, that type thing. They really eat healthily. I lost 21 pounds, and that was good for this guy. Chinese people think that American food is boring. We serve one meat and 2 or 3 vegetables, and they look at that and think, that's just not right. Their patience really impressed me, especially in traffic. They drive what I call Texas friendly. You know, if you're on a two-lane road in Texas and you need to pass somebody, you just go around them. It doesn't matter there's a Mack truck coming, because the truck will pull off the road a little bit, and the car you're passing will pull off, and it's a 3-lane road. That's how they drive. With hundreds of thousands of cars on the roads and traffic congestion like you've never seen it, except maybe Charlotte or Atlanta, they really get around, and they do it by driving friendly. I think I saw 2 fender benders the whole while I was there. And their patience in driving is amazing. What impressed me was their reforestation of the country. I know that they've had dust storms and lots of pollution, and I expected it to be basically deforested. They understand the need for trees and greenery, and their green spaces are absolutely beautiful. The trees, you can tell that it's all been done in the last 20 years or so. The economic miracle is something I think Americans have no idea of. Do you know which government has brought more people out of poverty in the last 50 years than any other government? The Chinese government. Now, they haven't done it with communism. They've done it with a dictatorial type of free enterprise system that's not quite as free as we would think it is. But it is an amazing thing. You can walk into a shopping mall and find 20 watch shops. There's Omega, Felipe, Tissot, all the fine watches. And a store that sells nothing but just that watch. Or they sell purses over there for thousands of dollars. I didn't know you could spend that much on a purse. And there are women lined up waiting to get in. They only let 4 in at a time. When one lady leaves, another one in the line goes in, and they make purchases, incredibly wealthy. Have you been to Charleston and seen the Ravenel Bridge, the new one that Charlestonians are so proud of? That cost over $1 billion. And it's the pride of South Carolina. I stood in one place in Guangzhou and counted over 12 bridges, just like the Ravenel Bridge, except longer. They are building infrastructure like you wouldn't believe. World-class architecture. In fact, I'm told that if you're an architect and you haven't built something in China, that you just don't rank yet. Incredible architecture. The bullet train is something that we rode on for a number of appointments. 240 miles an hour. Whisper quiet. You get up and walk to the restroom, just like walking across the floor here. And then you make the mistake of looking out the window and you realize how fast you're moving. We could never build a bullet train in this country. We can't even build a people mover in the RTP. You know why? Not in my backyard. Not over there either. But the Chinese say, build it. Well, we get all these people who live there, buy their land from them and tell them to move. They can galvanize political will like we can't quite do here in the United States. Feminine beauty is something that impressed me in China. Many American women on the campus have lost touch with their feminine side. Gym shorts, t-shirts, flip-flops. That's kind of the uniform at Carolina. But if you go into China, you see women in dresses, you see their hair done, you see very, very beautiful, lovely women. The work ethic of the Chinese people is incredibly impressive. No job is beneath your dignity. What John Calvin said is very true for them. There is no work, however vile or sordid, that doesn't glisten before the Lord. You see people out with a homemade broom sweeping the curb to keep their neighborhoods spotless. They do it every day. And then the vision of the Chinese people is absolutely amazing. When I was there, they opened a railroad line called the Silk Road. It comes from the history of the Chinese trade route. So there's now an open railroad for trade purposes between Beijing and Belgium. The train that goes between them carrying trade goods. Do you know their vision is to continue the Silk Road by building a railroad from Beijing through Russia, across the Aleutian Islands, across Alaska, down through Canada, through the United States, to the tip of South America? And they say its purpose is to create a win-win trades goods situation and raise other nations from poverty as the economy has done the Chinese people. They are good at purpose statements. Does Bible Church have a purpose statement? I'm pretty sure they do, but I wouldn't know what it is. The Chinese government has a purpose statement. You'll see it written on the walls of the subway system. You'll see it written on a hotel room wall. It's on a classroom wall. They want you to know this is our aim. This is where we're going. Now, the Chinese do some things poorly that the United States does poorly. They have a huge problem with pollution. I had to wear a mask quite a number of days. I'm told the pollution is the worst in the winter, but it can really grab you in the back of the throat unless you wear a mask. Divorce is a problem in China. The divorce rate in America is about 45%. In China, it's 60%. And they have a problem, as we do, with corruption, except they have fewer safeguards. We also have what we call lex rex in the Western world. Do you know your Latin? What does lex rex mean? The rule of law. The law is king. In China, you might say it's different. It's instead of lex rex, the law is king, they would say rex lex, or it would be backwards. The king is the law. I asked a young legal professor, how do you practice law in China when there's no set law? The law can be changed by the emperor from one to another, by the president. And he said, well, law basically is the craft of negotiation in China. Now, if you talk with an honest lawyer in the United States, he'll tell you that 80% of law in America never gets to court. It's negotiated settlements to save the price of law. In China, almost all law is negotiation. Negotiation. Traffic gridlock is a huge problem in China. And their one-child policy, which they've rescinded, now you can have two, has been an absolute disaster. One of the things the professors asked me to teach on was an odd subject, child rearing. And I said, why would you like me to teach on what the Bible says about child rearing? And they said, well, we have one child and we spoil him. And that did not work out very well. And we want to know how we could have done it better. Maybe there's still something we can do for our child. There is a very affluent adolescent group in China that walk down the road with selfie sticks. And every 20 steps, they stop and take a picture. And you'll see them pursing their lips or getting a petulant look or posing. I've never seen anything quite like it. And then they stop and look at the picture and decide which one they like and send it to their friends. And I'm thinking, oh, this doesn't bode well for the future of the Western world or China as well. Another major problem that they have in China is freedom. In fact, that's probably the biggest issue that I saw that they're in arrears with. Each year I take the distinguished visiting Chinese professors on a walking tour of Hillsboro, where I live. I show them where the Civil War ended, where General Johnson surrendered to Sherman. And they ask me things like, what happened to the Southern Army when they surrendered here? And I said, they signed a parole and were allowed to go home. Well, in our nation's history, when we subdue our enemies, we slaughter them. Why is it that they were allowed to go home? And I said, well, it's called forgiveness. It's a part of our Christian culture. No relationships beyond the forgiveness zone. We can be brothers again. We can fix what's wrong between us. And it was that hope that allowed the Confederates to go home and the Federals to allow them to go home freely. I saved the Presbyterian meeting house in Hillsboro for the last place we go. Out back of it, William Hooper is buried. Do you know who he is? One of the three signers of the Declaration of Independence from North Carolina. But do you know what happened in the old Presbyterian meeting house in Hillsboro? The North Carolina Assembly met after the American Revolution and decided not to become the 12th state. Do you know why? We didn't have a Bill of Rights. And I asked my visiting professors, do you know what the Bill of Rights is? No. What are the Bill of Rights? Can you name them? Freedom of speech. Freedom of assembly. Freedom of religion. Trial by jury of your peers. No exceptional punishment for crimes. What are some of the other freedoms? Freedom of the press. Yeah, freedom to vote. This sort of thing. And one of the Chinese professors looked at me and he said, Stephen, in our country, we don't have any of those freedoms. And it's very obvious in China. They're very surveilled people. You have a card which you show at the bus stop, which you show at the train station. They want to know where you are, what you're doing, what your business is. Spiritually, it's the same there as it is here. Their babies cry. They're frustrated because their moped won't start and they can't get to work on time. They fall in love and it's unrequited. They're addicted to their iPhones. They don't understand their adolescent children. And their search for meaning is just as intense, perhaps even more so than I find it here in the United States. You turn the TV on in China, and it really is propaganda. Many of the sitcoms are telling the Chinese how good they have it, how happy they should be. We're a very individual country here in America. The Chinese are not individualistic in their outlook on life. They're more communal. And the message again and again and again that the Chinese are using to consolidate their people is kind of a warmed over Taoism, a Confucianism, or Buddhism, which says suffering is a part of life. You can't get away from pain. Fit in, do your part in community, obey the emperor. We'll get further together than we will as individuals. And TV is used to reinforce that. There's an official Christian church in China. The pastor's salaries are paid by the Chinese government officials. They have to turn their sermon in writing on Thursday. It's edited, and it's given back to them, and they can only say the edited version. Now, there is what's called the underground church. It's not illegal to be a member of the underground church, but you can't have more than 50 members. The Chinese don't want any large groups like Tiananmen Square students getting together. So the underground church cannot have more than 50 people. And they're often persecuted. Police were at the door of a number of churches where I preached, asking for ID cards and taking names. You don't go far in the Communist Party if you're a member of the underground church. One clever pastor that I preached for has five churches with 50 people in each church. Instead of preaching one sermon to 250 people, he just preached the same sermon five times. And the church meets in five different places. It's perfectly legal. Clever people. The underground churches that I visited and preached in are very committed to Jesus Christ. They take their baptism very seriously. And they will tell you, God takes my baptism seriously. Why should I not take it seriously? They're very loving people, and they're very hungry. What did I preach on? I was always assigned a topic. I got there after an 18-hour journey, and I was just looking for the bed. They wanted to have a feast. That took 2 hours. They wanted to drink tea together. That took an hour. They wanted me to teach for an hour. They wanted to ask questions. That took 2 hours. They wanted to talk one-on-one. That took another hour. And then the leadership wanted to talk for an hour. So my first day was a 29-hour day. And I'm getting a little too old for that. But very, very hungry. They meet in office buildings and hotels, in their private apartments or homes. In Shanghai University, the church was being watched carefully. The pastor and his wife had been arrested and held overnight and interrogated for 24 hours. So they decided to hold a retreat with my teaching off campus, an hour away in the country. 60 people showed up. Now, what do? Do you tell 10 of them, hey, pal, you 10, you got to get out of here? We didn't do that. We said, well, this is who came. Let's teach them. We'll see what happens. The leaders had studied with us here in the United States at North Carolina State University. The lady was a PhD in agriculture with a specialty in growing rice. So we drive out an hour from the university down a two-lane road. We turn right at a cement plant, and we go across an earthen dam that's being overwashed with heavy rain. It looks like that dam could fail, but we drove across it. Then we go in mud that's about a foot deep in our four-wheel car, 2 miles up the side of a mountain into what looks like a jungle to me. And I'm thinking, where in the world are we going? Is that a tarantula I saw crawling on that tree? Was that a monkey? What were those eyes looking? Anyway, sure enough, we round a curve and we go into a five-story home that looks like an apartment building. They're eating on the bottom floor, living on the middle three floors. The chapel for teaching is on the fifth floor. I walk in the room and they're eating lunch, excitedly waiting for us. The first thing I notice in the room is they're incredibly filled with joy, just contagious joy in the room. The second thing I notice is that they all have muddy feet up to their knees. They had ridden the public bus out there and walked through that deep mud 2 miles up the road. You just don't find that type of spiritual hunger in the United States. What did they ask me to teach on? Suffering at the hands of the government. And we looked at Daniel. You know, Daniel, the Jewish man, they tried to change his name, change his haircut, change his clothing, change his geographical location, change his diet. And eventually, when they tried to change his God, he stood up to them. And we looked at the fiery furnace and Daniel in the lion's den. We also looked at Joseph, who was sold by his brothers into Egypt and suffered with Potiphar, and later spent 13 years in an Egyptian prison. But we looked at his servant attitude and how God pulled him through. And we looked at having respect for our government, even if it's not the one we would have elected ourselves. That's just as pertinent in the United States, however you vote, isn't it? Well, after the meal, we had our teaching. 2 1-hour sessions, 2 hours worth of question and answers, an hour meeting with individuals. And I'll never forget this one Chinese kid that's big guy like me. He came up to me and he looked at me with dark brown eyes and a sad look on his face, and he said, "I'm manic depressive. No woman will be my friend. I can't hold a job. Is there a place for me in the kingdom of God?" And we went through the Bible and talked about handicaps. Paul being short and having poor eyesight. Moses who stuttered. And how all of us are imperfect vessels. We have this treasure, the Bible says, in earthen pots to show that the transcending power is of the Lord and His Spirit. It's interesting, that word earthen vessels in the Greek is cracked pots. Church is a bunch of crackpots filled with the Holy Ghost that God is able to use in ways beyond our understanding. What are some of the issues the Chinese professors and students struggled with? A career that was stagnant, depression, loneliness, feeling like they're in a dead-end job, doctrinal questions. A lot of issues about marriage. I was talking with one young lady and I said, "You know, I wish you could get on the Carolina Study Center website. You can do a premarital self-study there." And she said, "Well, let me see if I can bring it up." And she got on her iPhone and in 30 seconds had it. I didn't know that the Study Center website could be picked up in China, but it can. And she's been reading the subjects and talking with me about it in email. Well, our vision with the team is to minister to these 200 professors. Now, when I mention the team, there are 5 of us. And I'm the weak link in that team. Dr. Peter Poon, born in Hong Kong, a Columbia University graduate, is the visionary. His wife, Celia, who grew up in Taiwan and is also a Columbia graduate, retired from IBM, is the logistic person. She can organize the moon. Caroline Ping used to lead the Chinese ministry at Duke University. He's a Princeton graduate. He's pastoral care, and he also is very much a genius with social networking. He can find you and get us there in China. Our driver is out of Guangzhou. His name is Mr. Chen. He has a second-grade Chinese education, but he's streetwise. And he can find anything in traffic. "Here's the address we're going, Mr. Chen." And 2.5 hours later through traffic, when you think we're impossibly lost, we're just around the curve. We're almost there. He pulls right up where we're supposed to be. And then myself. I remember leaving the retreat, and the people said, "You have taught us well, Stephen. Now you must come back monthly and be our teacher." You know that 70% of trained theologians work in the Western world? That only leaves 30% of trained divinity graduates for the rest of the world. And what you find, not just in China, but around the world, are people who are starved for good evangelical biblical teaching and theology that doesn't wander into strange doctrines or strange ideas. And the Chinese are very hungry for that. So we plan to teach these 200 visiting professors, to feed them, to go one-on-one and build relationships with them. When they go back to China, we keep in touch with them through Chairlon's social networking. We plan to go over once a year and teach in 2 or 3 of the schools. We did 6 this time for 6 weeks. It was too much. It was 4 months of work in 6 weeks. I'm still recovering from it. Charles Malik, the former president of the UN, said this: "The university is the clear-cut fulcrum with which to move the world." Quite literally, move the university and you move the world. 200 professors a year, 10 years, 2,000 professors. That's a lot of salt to put back in mainland China. Probably the best thing this trip did for me was to give me credentials with the Chinese professors. I've been there. I've been incarnated in their culture. I respect it and appreciate it. I know enough to know how much I don't know. But it means a lot to them that you're not just teaching them, that you care to enter their world and let them teach you. And they do have many things. The professors who found out we were coming always met us at the airport. And they met us with great joy, lots of memories. We feasted around these tables. They brought their associates with them. They're not yet Christians, but they're like my lab assistants in research. And we just wanted them to meet some other Christians and hear the conversation. Or I was teaching on environmentalism from a biblical point of view, an assigned subject, and they wanted them to get that information. Often the professors would say, tomorrow morning if you're free, let me show you some of the glories of China around here. And that's how I got to go to the Great Wall of China or the Terracotta Warriors or whatever. Remember the story in the New Testament, the walk to Emmaus? Ministry was done there in small groups, and it was done around meal tables. A lot of ministry in China is done that way. Small groups of 50 or less, twos or threes, whatever, and on walks, talking, history, answering questions. D.L. Moody said, preaching is like throwing a bucket of water over a row of pop bottles. You splash a little water in each bottle. But pastoral care is like taking each bottle separately and topping it off. So what we do here in the United States is throw the bucket of water over the row of pop bottles. But what we do in China is take each bottle separately and top it off. Well, conclusion. The Chinese are just like us. They want what we want. They want food. They want love. They want a house. They certainly want peace. And they want meaning in their life. There's 1.4 billion Chinese people. And nobody knows how many Christians there are in China. The best estimate is that there are probably 20 million. And I would say, as a pastor, from what I've seen in the underground church, there's great potential for revival in China. We should be praying for that underground church. We should be throwing treasure at it, financing it as much as we can. Marco Polo journeyed to China under the Khan in the 1200s AD. And he came back and he wrote a book called The Travels of Marco Polo. Well, the church took him to task for it and said, these are your vain imaginings. These people don't exist, and these things didn't really happen. You need to recant. You're a liar, Marco Polo. You know what Marco Polo told his critics? Behold, the half of it I haven't told you. And I could say the same thing about it. Well, 20% of what I do now with the Carolina Study Center is with these visiting professors in China. And I really enjoy it, and I plan to continue. It's just after 9 o'clock. Do we have time for questions, or is that time used up?
I wish we did, but why don't we conclude by saying that if you would, and you have a burning question, just come up and talk to Stephen afterwards.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we don't have the 2 hours necessary for all the questions.
If any of you would like to follow the study center, there's a newsletter here. You can pick it up, and if you email me, we'll add you to the list.